Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the day after the Pennsylvania primary, the primary that Hillary Clinton won, and her spin from one of her spokespersons last night in Philadelphia said there's beginning to be a subtle shift of psychology of a lot of the uncommitted supers. They're beginning to wonder why Obama has been unable to win this thing despite all the advantages he has. There's a lot of questions that are beginning to surface about him. While superdelegates are learning that every time she's got her back up against the wall, she delivers. The New York Times had a pretty scathing editorial today. The Pennsylvania campaign, which produced yet another inconclusive result on Tuesday, was even meaner, more vacuous, more desperate, and more filled with pandering than the mean, vacuous, desperate, pandering-filled contest that preceded it. Voters are getting tired of it. It's demeaning the political process, and it does not work. It's past time for Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton to acknowledge that the negativity for which she is mostly responsible does nothing but harm to her, her opponent, her party, and the 2000 election. So we have all kinds of things to talk about today with a wonderful guest. Sander Van Oker is joining us, a 40-year veteran of print and broadcast journalism. His career includes work for NBC, ABC, The New York Times, and The Washington Post. He has a degree from Northwestern University School of Speech, with an emphasis in political science. He hosts the primetime series Movies in Time and Histories in Business, both on the History Channel. And he spent a number of years with both of those networks. He also was Washington correspondent for the Today Show, contributing editor to the Huntley-Brinkley Report, and the host of First Tuesday, a monthly magazine show. He worked, as I said, for the New York Times and began his journalism career as a reporter on the London staff of the Manchester Guardian. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Sander Van Oker. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. We'll be jammed with calls, so get your thoughts in early. Send an email if you'd like, and that is talk@wpr.org. Talk@wpr.org. Hello, Sander Van Oker. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. You're listening to that list of jobs. Sounds like I can't keep a steady one.
But you were at each job for a pretty long period of time, right? You just needed a little variety after a while.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where are you sitting in Milwaukee?
I'm sitting in downtown Milwaukee on Kilburn and Water Street in a studio, a beautiful studio. Why do you ask?
Well, if I were there, I'd ask you after we're through to take me over to that wonderful museum you have, which I think is possibly the most beautiful one in the world.
Ah, and if you were here, we would do that.
Okay.
And we would have lunch, too.
Where, Mama Racha's?
I guess. You know, I like this Serbian restaurant on the south side of town. It's kind of unusual.
Well, Mama Racha's, back in the days of the Kennedy-Humphrey Wisconsin primary, was the place we all hung out.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Yeah, it's still there. Well,
good.
We could go there if you wanted to go there. You know,
all right.
You'd be our guest.
And then we'll go to the Serbian one.
All right. So what do you make of this comment? Every time she's got her back up against the wall, she delivers.
Sounds like a sexual act. I don't know. It's a pattern. And perhaps unknowingly, the media keeps it going.
Mm.
Because last night, everybody was talking about this win, big win, 10%. A month ago, she was leading by more than 20%.
Right.
So this is something that I think I gave this title to many years ago, the expectations game.
Mm-hmm.
The media creates the expectations and then adjusts its coverage depending on how things go, up or down. But I noticed from what I read on the Internet this morning that she is going on, and even though the New York Times, which I think was read in the news, endorsed her, it is being very tough on her.
It sure is.
So I don't know what she does from now on except what she's been doing.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that Pennsylvania particularly has been just a really desperate, vacuous, nasty campaign, and is it her fault?
I think it's possibly the fault of her advisors. I don't think it's been a desperate campaign. I covered the state for years, and it's a very complicated place. But when you are behind, you do things that may seem to some desperate.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't accuse her of that one way or the other. It's the way she campaigns.
And what about, you know, I'm trying to figure out how this played in. Barack comments, the bitter comment, people saw it as demeaning working class voters, people with guns, and 38% of people in Pennsylvania have guns, demeaning bowlers, et cetera. Did you read his comment that way? She certainly used that as a way to classify him as elitist. Did that work?
Yeah, it did, and I think he chose the wrong words.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the whole idea of having guns, it's not confined to just working people or desperate people in Pennsylvania. A lot of people in this country, including Wisconsin.
Sure.
Where I remember your late and much lamented Gaylord Nelson, who's a dear friend, told me about he would go out hunting with his father, who was a doctor. And Frank Church, a liberal from Idaho, always said that that was one of the big issues in the state. So I just think Obama, he went off key. And I think he paid for it.
Mm-hmm. And what about the other things he's gone off key on? Did the right thing hurt him substantially, Sander?
The which one?
Reverend Wright.
Yeah, but that is a very difficult one to handle. And having lived and reported from Chicago, you just don't excommunicate, as it were, your reverend. But it was very simple to handle. The reverend spoke for himself. He knows I don't agree with him, and he's known it for years.
Mm-hmm.
See, we live in a soundbite world.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to shovel these things out like they're things that you pop out of a one of those cookies, a fortune cookie at a Chinese restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Because the soundbite, a woman named Kiki Adatu at Harvard about 20 years ago wrote a book called The Soundbite, and she showed things that I had done to me. And it was about 52 seconds, the average. Now it's about 7 or 8 seconds.
Hmm.
So that's the world we live in, for better or for worse.
And then it goes on and on and on, the same soundbite.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It compounds the unintelligible.
Mm-hmm. The analysts last night were saying that Clinton's chances of winning the nomination based now on pledged delegates is effectively over.
I did some arithmetic this morning, and I think that's about right. And Obama got a endorsement, as you know, from the governor of Oklahoma this morning,
mm-hmm.
Brad Henry. I think the Chicago headquarters issued it this morning. And nothing is ever impossible, but I can't, you know, I was kind of raised on politics in Chicago at Northwestern, and then I worked for NBC there. And I learned from a very old pal there named High Raskin, who worked for Adlai Stevenson.
Oh, Jack, sure.
Kennedy,
yeah.
That politics is arithmetic. And maybe Hillary Clinton and her people are using the new math, which I don't understand, but the old math, and I've added it up, I can't put together, though anything's possible, I can't put together the arithmetic of a delegate victory.
What about a popular vote victory?
Oh, that's always possible. But you've got some states coming up where he seems to enjoy some comfort, namely North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how he's going to do in Guam. That's 4 votes. And in Indiana. Indiana is a very, very complex state. Not many people know that the Mason-Dixon line goes straight through the middle of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. So there's some southern elements in both places. And then you got Oregon and Kentucky on the same date. So everything is up there for grab.
And what about the superdelegates, Sander? I mean, the Clinton campaign has been saying so much about these and trying to persuade them. What are we doing with them to begin with? Is it likely they were going to dump them after this campaign? And what would happen if this is decided on the basis of superdelegates?
Well, I think that's one of the things that the Clinton folks are going to raise. That, but she has to have, you see, more delegates elected than Obama before they can use this,
mm-hmm.
that you can't abandon the quote-unquote will of the people. But I think, and this is just supposition on my part, the lot of these superdelegates are office holders. And I think, this is just supposition on my part, they're beginning to wonder what this battle is going to do to the party's chances against John McCain.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, the Democrats in the Congress want to improve their standing there, their position, get some more seats. And I think they're looking at this as something that was, given the figures on Bush's popularity yesterday, would be just a walk away. Maybe complicated by what's going on now.
Yeah. And what about the party's chances against John McCain? Are both of them, do you think, being seriously damaged because of the nastiness of this campaign?
I think so.
Do you?
Yeah. But how do I know what John McCain's going to come out with in a few weeks?
Mm-hmm.
See, we live in this 24-hour news cycle. I call it the electronic tapeworm. Has to be fed all the time. And you can't say, I don't know, until this morning when I say, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. What is it that keeps, let's talk about these working class voters, union voters, people who, you know, are struggling, have to take on a couple jobs. I mean, I think there are a whole lot of people in this country who are really hurting economically right now. I'm not sure any candidate has an answer to this. But these people seem to be breaking for Senator Clinton for some reason. They feel that she is the one who can address their woes. Why is it that Obama has not been able to break into those voters? And why is she the one that voters feel can ease their woes?
Well, you see, I think he could have stopped it by simply saying, I run for the presidency because I wish to save the free enterprise system for all Americans. And it isn't just working class people. You've got a thing, and the title comes from a book a man named William Galston wrote. He was at the University of Maryland, worked for Clinton in the first term, and now he's at Brookings Institution. And he mentions it as middle class marginality.
Hmm.
Husband and wife both working, just getting by on the margin.
Yeah.
And after this mortgage business we've gone through, I keep thinking about FDR. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And a lot of people fear a lot in this country now.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. So how do you allay their fears? Who has a plan in place to make this economy vibrant again?
Well, I think the whole question has to be, what role do we want our government to play? The best speech I've ever heard on this was in 1983. Dale Bumpers was thinking of running for the presidency or the Democratic nomination. We're in Atlanta, and he talked about this whole thing. His father, poor dirt farmer, aided by the TVA and electricity, he went to Northwestern on the GI Bill.
Mm.
I think until we really have a debate in this country about what we want our government to do, what we want our government not to do,
mm-hmm.
we're not going to make it.
And for some reason, we're not having that debate because...
Can I answer that question?
Please.
Why isn't that issue put up to these candidates in debates?
That's a good point. Well, because people want to know why flag pins aren't worn by everybody.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just end it on there. I don't have to go on that one.
Yeah. Because it certainly is, and polls show again and again that that's the issue. It's the economy.
Well, sure. You see, I'm surprised Mrs. Clinton and Barack Obama have two different health plans. And Obama's is based on the idea if you give it to children, 0 to 5 years old, you might get the benefits of preventive health care. Hillary Clinton has a much broader plan, and what I don't understand is why he has not brought up what a mess she made of health care when her husband gave her a commission in 1993 to do some reform, and doctors I've talked to said she and Bill Clinton and the Clinton administration set back the whole issue 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think the health of the country is the greatest capital investment you can make in your country.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't be that expensive.
So part of the problem is that he doesn't want to take her on because he doesn't want to diminish respect people have for the Clintons, or it's not in his nature. His nature is to bring people together and not to be on the attack. I mean, he's in kind of this weird position of how to proceed from here.
I think you've put your finger on it. On the other hand, there's a theory going around now that people who are prone to Hillary Clinton think if they get her, they'll get him. They'll get what's called a twofer.
Mm.
But knowing a little bit about their relationship, I would imagine if she were elected president and he offered a suggestion, the first thing she'd say to him, can I see your green card?
Mm.
I just don't think. I think the country feels, let's say goodbye. That's my feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But Barack Obama's campaign is not helping them reach that conclusion.
Sander Van Oker is our guest. We're going to go to your many phone calls, and we'll take them in just one moment. He is a 40-year veteran of print and broadcast journalism. He's worked for NBC, ABC, The New York Times, The Washington Post. He's hosted the primetime series Movies in Time and History's Business, both on the History Channel. He has been chief diplomatic correspondent, senior correspondent in Buenos Aires, anchor for Business World. He covered the 1997, 98, and 99 economic summits and was chief overview correspondent during the 1980 and 1984 presidential elections. He served as the White House correspondent with NBC, national political correspondent, Washington correspondent for the Today Show, contributing editor to the Huntley-Brinkley Report, and host of First Tuesday, a monthly magazine show. And he started his whole career as a reporter on the London staff of the Manchester Guardian. To your phone calls, we, of course, are talking about the Pennsylvania primary, Hillary Clinton's win by 10 points yesterday, how everybody is spinning this, whether or not you would agree with the New York Times editorial that this has become negative, heavily negative, and that's not good for anybody, and why it is that he hasn't sealed the deal here yet. Take on any part of it you'd like, okay? 800-486-8655, 227-2050 for those of you who are in Milwaukee. If you'd like to send an email, our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, a guest we really took to when we had him on several months ago, Brian Fagan will be with us. He's the author of The Great Warming, Climate Change, and the Rise and Fall of Civilizations. He's a professor of anthropology at University of California, Santa Barbara, and you will find it a fascinating interview because he looks at the story of climate change between the 10th and 15th centuries and puts all of that into context. Sander Van Oker is with us now. We start our calls with Jim from Salt Lake City. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Kathleen. Good to hear you. Mr. Van Oker, I have a question about the electronic media in general, with the exception of Wisconsin Public Radio. It seems as though they're like chasing the same soundbite, you know, whether it's a bad audio of a fundraiser or something else, that it's like this mob media that they all jump on this one issue, which is so superficial. Whereas print reporters tend to do a little bit more research, try to find a different story, and you get a little bit more in depth with the candidates. Do you think that the electronic press people are not as well qualified to handle presidential issues such as the economy or the war or other things? Do they just not have the capability to explain that in a two-minute story? I mean, it's just so disturbing to me that there's so many things out there, and no matter what channel you turn on, the first three stories are the same. It's almost like they all had lunch together and said, what are you going to talk about? We'll do the same.
Well, I'm reminded of what a late comedian, radio, Fred Allen, very funny man, once said, imitation is the sincerest form of television. I want to be very careful because I think there are a lot of very good people in television news, including my son, who works at the ABC affiliate in Salt Lake City, and broke the Olympic scandal story.
Oh.
And I just think that no matter how good whether you came out of print or you'd like to do what you just described, it's very difficult, given what I said before was this 24-hour-a-day electronic tapeworm that has to be fed all the time. And it's like a wheel that just goes around, a Hindu prayer wheel. It goes around and around and around. And it's very difficult to stop and say, I don't know, or this is more complex than I'm going to be able to report. You won't be around very long. And I don't see the thing getting any better. Again, I don't want to impugn the capabilities of many reporters in television news, but it's the structure of television news and this 24-hour-a-day news cycle that makes it difficult to say, one, I don't know, two, or this is more complicated than it seems, and this is all I know right now.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jim, for your call. Mohammed from Madison is next. Hi, Mohammed.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my
call.
You know, aside from the point I want to respond to, which is why I think Barack Obama, doesn't mix it up more with Hillary Clinton and keeps things on an intellectual plane. I recall during the Iowa campaign, he did this, and it looked like, and it was interpreted to me by particularly George Stephanopoulos comes to mind, of a black guy beating up a white woman. And I think he wants to stay away from that. That interpretation is almost inescapable for Barack Obama.
Sam?
I think you put yourself right on the dot with a very subtle and brilliant interpretation. And I think that's right, because we have found out in Pennsylvania, sure, she got a lot of white female votes, but she's gotten a lot of votes from older white males. So this has not disappeared from our lives, and I think you're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mohammed, so much for your call. What about this has been written about lately, whether or not he's an elitist, this Ivy League education? The question has been asked with Obama, are we looking at a JFK or are we looking at an Adlai Stevenson?
Maybe you're looking at both. Adlai went to Princeton and JFK went to Harvard. But nothing wrong with that. If I had gone to the University of Wisconsin instead of Northwestern, I'd have worn it like a badge. It's just, that's the part of getting on in this country, going to good schools. No, I don't think so. I think he brings a touch of class to the proceedings.
Mm-hmm. Marilyn from Madison. Hi.
Oh, hi. Kathleen, I'm so glad you're back.
Thanks, Marilyn.
I'm feeling better. I was interested in this article in the Chicago Tribune, I think it was, that volunteers in politics in Philadelphia expect to be paid, whereas they work for free in political contests in other places. And apparently Barack Obama was not planning to come up with this money for the political workers, whereas they thought Hillary Clinton would be doing that. I wonder if that might have figured in.
Yeah, what's the story on that, Sandra? Are people being paid? We can get money for you, $40, get you to the polls. Is that going on?
I don't know. It's been a long time since I was in Philadelphia. But remember, out here in California, there's just been a book published about him. We had a very celebrated speaker, then treasurer, named Jess Unruh. And he coined the phrase, money is the mother's milk of politics.
Right.
I know Obama's got much more money than Hillary Clinton. Did he use it or not? I don't know. And is that what brought about this result? I'm not sure. I think it's a little more complicated.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. But much has been made of the fact, and let's talk about TV advertising for a while. He did, everybody was saying yesterday, outspend her 3-1, 2-1. My husband was in Philadelphia last week and said the ads were just amazing. They were all over the place. If he didn't win it, or at least cut the margin more than he apparently did. How effective are those ads? What difference does it make to have a whole lot of money to buy television ads?
I don't know the answer. A lot of studies have been made. There's a very funny takeoff, by the way, on the Internet this morning on the Washington Post website. I think the reporter is Dana Milbank.
Mm-hmm.
Gets a call at 3 a.m. in the morning, and he's got to go out and cover Hillary again because he really wants this thing to end and so forth. I just don't know the answer. But the important thing is if people in television think it matters, then they can sell it to a political organization just like they can sell it to somebody who's advertising soap.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. But we proceed in politics, very much so, increasingly so, on the basis that we do know, and if we don't know, we can't afford not to go ahead with television.
Mm-hmm. Do you want this thing to go ahead? Are you kind of interested in the process and want it to go on for a long time?
Which, this campaign?
Yeah.
Not really, because, you see, I think if they get down to the wire, and I don't think she's going to bow out graciously if she doesn't have the votes, then they're going to start talking about going to a smoke-filled room,
mm-hmm.
a.k.a. Superdelegates, not remembering that you can't have smoke-filled rooms anymore because of OSHA. See, I think that politicians are among the better elements of our society. And if a group of people like the superdelegates want to sit down and get together and say, look, this shouldn't go on anymore, it'll hurt us all in November and maybe get John McCain elected, they're perfectly entitled to do that. But you see, Mrs. Clinton is not going to go gently into this good night.
Right.
On the Internet today, a man who used to work for her and her husband, Dick Morris, he's very blunt about it. There's nowhere to go for Mrs. Clinton anymore. But she doesn't believe that, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I know? If I were in her shoes, I don't know if I would believe it either. But yeah. She's not going to go gently into this good night.
No, no, that's pretty obvious, isn't it?
Yeah.
And on some level, people kind of like that about her. They like the fact that she's a fighter, but it doesn't seem to be any way for her to win this, so it's futile.
The arithmetic, again, going back to politics being arithmetic, and I did it this morning, I don't see it, but she believes, especially after yesterday, she and her people think this was a great victory.
Right.
And granted, as I said before, it was supposed to be above 20%, and he cut her lead down to 10%.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what's going to happen in Indiana. But it's not over. But I can't put together the arithmetic of how she puts together
right.
the arithmetic of a Hillary Clinton delegate victory.
Yeah. Here's an email. David in Menominee, call me naive, but I think that once the dust has cleared and Obama is the Democratic nominee, everything will look different when the election is mano a mano with John McCain. The differences in how each would govern would be stark. McCain will be identified with the Bush policies. Can the American electorate, as angry and scared as they are, possibly elect another neoconservative president? It boggles my imagination.
I don't think so, but that depends not so much about McCain as to who opposes him and what the Democrats have done to themselves by the time the election takes place. Remember, we got four presidential debates, and a lot of people in this country have never seen John McCain debate in a one-on-one situation. Like a Kennedy-Nixon thing. So I think it's all up in the air.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Rosalyn from Ellison Bay. Hi, Rosalyn.
Hi. I had 2 points, and one is off-topic, a personal question to Mr. Van Oker. And I think I will just save that and try and find an email and email him that question. My second point is that on the Lehrer show last week, David Brooks made the comment that the flag lapel pin issue was an appropriate question because what we're really asking is this candidate someone like me? And my point is, I don't want someone like me to be president. I want someone much more intelligent and much more competent than me. And why do we try to bring this down to a common denominator and call someone who is well-educated elitist?
Well, we got this way because of the media we got. I'm not sure democracy can survive our mass media. I don't even know what the phrase came from. When I was growing up, media was a Greek sorceress usually played on the stage by Dame Judith Anderson. I don't know where the word media came from. All I know is there's a lot of them around who say they're reporters and couldn't cover a two-car funeral. But that's the world we live in. Everybody gets up and says, I'm part of the media. I'm a reporter. In my day, you had to do a little more work to get the phrase reporter attached to yourself.
Yeah, I believe that's very true.
And this is not going to get better. It's going to get worse because of technology.
Mm-hmm. What do you anticipate is going to happen in the couple weeks now before Indiana and North Carolina? How is this? Imagine it's going to get even more negative here, or it's reached the point. And, gosh,
if I were advising Obama, I would say, end it.
How?
Just by saying to the American people, like Kennedy did in 1960, I want to get this country moving again. And that, I think, was born out of the absolute shock this country had. I had just come to Washington in the fall of 57 when the Russians put a spacecraft in space. And we didn't. Mm-hmm. We didn't have one yet. So I think this country has great opportunities ahead and great difficulties. And I think the issue is the health of this nation. I repeat, the health of this nation. The health, doctors, pills, technology, the health of our economy, the health of our education. I think if he would go on a theme like that, people would say, look, that's what we want. You see, I think his appeal is he is not the past. He's the future.
Right.
And I think being American is all about wanting to go through the unexplored future of America.
And for her, do you imagine it will be more of the picking up on gaffes that he has made when, bitter gaffes?
Yeah, I think it will be, because I think what she's saying is, God, I can get away with this. I could never do this to Bill.
Ah! Sandra Van Ocker is our guest. And we have phones open now, so please join the conversation. We're talking about all the intricacies of the Pennsylvania primary and the primaries ahead and where this campaign is going and what about those pledged delegates and what about what Senator Clinton is saying, that people are beginning to wonder why Obama's been unable to win this thing despite all the advantages he has. Does she still have every kind of chance? Why hasn't he nailed it yet? What kind of campaign does he need to carry forward? Is it hurting the Democrats and their chances of beating John McCain for this to go on and on and on and on? It's been a long one. We welcome your phone calls. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Milwaukee area callers 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. You can also send an email if you'd like, and that's talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn, Sandra Van Ocker, our guest, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, Brian Fagan will be our guest, author of The Great Warming, Climate Change, and the Rise and Fall of Civilizations. Sandra Van Ocker with us this hour. We're talking politics, Pennsylvania primary, and more. He's a 40-year veteran of print and broadcast journalism, has worked for NBC, ABC, The New York Times, The Washington Post, and The Manchester Guardian. And we go back to phone calls and emails, too. talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. Michael from Rockford, Illinois. Hi, Michael.
Hello. I'd like to ask why Howard Dean hasn't told the superdelegates to commit.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that, Michael.
I'd like to know why Howard Dean hasn't told the superdelegates to commit.
Okay, Howard Dean.
He has come very close, but they don't have to do what he says. And he's come very close, and it may be when it's all over in June, if it's ever all over, voting, he will call together a group of people, he, Nancy Pelosi, some other leaders in the Congress, and just say, look, got to do this. But he's tried, but it has had no effect, or no effect that I can see.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the American people? Are we getting kind of tired of this whole process now, Sandra? Everybody used to really be excited and tuning in, and it seems as though a lot of the excitement has waned a bit lately.
Oh, sure. You can say imitation has become the sincerest form of politics.
Mm-hmm.
I'm right now reading a marvelous book about Mel Laird from Wisconsin.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, Dale Van Atta, V-A-N-A-T-T-A. And I think about the first time I met Mel. I met him with Gaylord Nelson. They served in the legislature in Wisconsin. And Gaylord's gone. Mel is not gone, thank God. And I just miss the collegiality that used to exist in politics.
Mm-hmm.
And that was before television made it absolutely mandatory that nothing took place unless you saw it on television.
Hmm.
And you could say, I don't know. But you can't, you have to fill that air. That's why I call it the tapeworm.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever have to fill that air? And it's hour after hour after hour on these cable networks, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And then you hear the same thing all the time.
You hear the same thing all the time. And it didn't used to be that way.
Yeah. Thanks, Michael, for the call. We go to Tom next from Janesville. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
Hi.
My question is this. I feel that we've moved very far to the right. I think that the Bush administration are fascists. I want to know what Mr. Van Oppers thinks that Mr. Obama's talk about the future can help us overcome our racist past in light of where America is right now. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
If I heard you say our racist past, I emphasize, I think it's past. I covered civil rights. I don't think it's gone, but it's not what it used to be. And I think that a lot of people are voting for Obama because they want to acknowledge and praise what we've done on civil rights. That's why the Reverend in Chicago was so out of line.
Right.
And why such a reaction came about in this country. Lord, I think about when I started covering civil rights in Little Rock in 1958. I spent the better part of 2 years in covering Dr. King. We've come a long way, and I think in many ways, to a lot of people, Barack Obama is a manifestation and a justification and a joy of where we've come. Got a long road to go, but we've come a long way, too.
Mm-hmm. That was what was so, I mean, it really did strike my heart, no matter where I happen to be politically, but when he made his announcement in Springfield, Illinois, at the old State House, and I thought about a man I have dearly loved and read so much about, Abraham Lincoln, I just, there it all was, you know, Abraham Lincoln, Barack Obama.
Well, I think it's very tough for people living in Wisconsin to look out at what's going on now and not despair. Because if I had to place the word democracy and put a spotlight on it, I'd put it right in Madison, Wisconsin. But I wouldn't do it at 5 o'clock in the morning at the Oscar Mayer meatpacking plant, where we used to go out and have to cover candidates in presidential primaries.
Stephen from Muscatine, hello. Stephen, oh, I got to press the right button, Kathleen. Hi, Stephen.
Hello. I just wanted to make a comment. I'm actually not from rural Wisconsin. I just recently immigrated here, but I'm a lifelong Democrat. I have never voted Republican. I am so angry with the Democrats. It's ridiculous. And I'll be honest, I'm not voting for Hillary, so I don't have a choice. It means third party, not voting. You know, I mean, I just wanted to make a point. I'll take my comment off the air after this, but you know, it's disconcerting. It's very disconcerting. You know, as a Democrat, lifelong Democrat, you know, left leaning, we've destroyed our own party, and the Republicans are going to win. All right, I'll thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
All right.
I don't know if the Republican is going to win, but I think the caller has really personified what I believe to be a mood of, I don't want to say despair, but doubt about the road the Democratic Party is going on.
And who's in it to change that? I mean, could that be changed in the next couple months, Sander?
Oh, sure. Sure. Look, go back as a model. The Kennedy campaign, again, I said before, I want to get this country moving again.
Uh-huh.
He had another issue he had to deal with. It wasn't race, it was Catholicism.
Right.
And I was there when he went to speak in September to the Houston Ministerial Association and took on the issue. I think if Obama is the nominee, he simply has to set out what the future of this country should be and how all Americans can join with him, a Democrat, and his party in seeking that future. Because I think this country desperately wants to look into the future, not just adults for themselves, but for their children, and to see not that it's going to be easy, but there's a chance for everyone.
Mm-hmm. It's been a hard time. It really has been a hard time. The wars are hard. The economy's hard. It just hasn't.
I think so, too. And the health issue is tough.
Right, yeah.
And we're hardworking people. And the rest of the world is not going to stop and offer us a hand as we did with the Marshall Plan after World War II.
Yeah. Here's an email, Dale from Springstead. It seems to me the battle between the Democrats is virtually guaranteeing another 4 years of Republican rule. Despite McCain protestations, that would be much different than 8 years under Bush. I'm beginning to believe the only way the Democrats can win in November is for Obama and Clinton to bury their egos and join forces with a joint Obama-Clinton ticket.
I can't think of a greater political nightmare than the two of them joining together. Because what I think, if she's the vice president, she'll do to him is what she hasn't done to her husband.
Hmm. And where would he be in all of this? Where would he be in an administration with her? You wonder about that.
Well, there's a story that went around when they bought the house at Chappaqua. Two Secret Service men were standing outside, one said to the other, "Where does the name Chappaqua come from?" The other Secret Service guy says, "It's an Indian name." The first Secret Service guy says, "Yeah? What's it stand for?" The other one says, "Separate bedrooms." I've been thinking about what would Bill Clinton do in a White House where his wife was president and another person was vice president. What would he do?
I don't know.
Except go out and make more speeches and make more money.
Right.
He's not a man without talent.
Mike with us from Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. Mr. Van Oker, you know, based on your 40 years of covering the news and your experience, what is your sense of the world? Tough question, but your sense of direction that the country is moving in, and I'm not talking about the politicians, just, you know, a general sense. How do you think we're going to deal with a major conflict that I see coming with the Middle Eastern countries and, you know, China there on the horizon? They've got large plans for the world, and how are we going to confront that? What do we need to do to move forward?
Well, I mentioned a few moments ago the health of our nation. I think one of the most unhealthy things I've ever witnessed, and I've just turned 80.
Have you really? Congratulations, Mike.
Well, all I can say is screw the golden years. All I can say is that I think the entry into the Middle East, with all the conflict and the difficulties and the histories of conflict that has come out of that world over time, how these people sat in Washington and one of them said, "This will be a slam dunk," I'll never know. As for Asia, I think our future is finding a way to deal with Asia in a profitable way for us and for Asians. But here we are. We're trying to enlarge NATO when we should just leave it alone. It was set up to ward off Soviet aggression, George Kennan called containment. Now we want to spread it out all over. I'm not arguing isolationism, and I'm a Midwesterner, and I know what isolation meant to this country in the most awful sense back in the 30s and 40s. I'm just saying, tend to our own business, and the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm. I think we've got a foreign policy that does harm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If that's isolationism, so be it.
Thank you, Mike, so much for your call. Daryl from Bloomington, hi.
Yeah, good morning, Kathleen. I think if we had some authentic journalists, they would expose what's really going on. It's cultural warfare. It's identifying someone by association. And if you did that, you could look at the associates that Jesus Christ had, and you could label him. But there's a book out, Culture Wars, by James Davison Hunter. It's an excellent book. And we're actually what's happening here is both Republicans and Democrats are voting on these non-issues, these wedge issues, these cultural issues that are not going to help anybody. In fact, the best person as far as foreign relations and everything is Barack Obama, because unless we solve the wars over there, our economy is going to go down the dumpster.
Sander.
Well, I don't know how we ever solve the wars there. The best we can do is try to stay out of them. I know we're the world's largest power, and I know issues come up like Israel versus the Muslim countries that we get involved in. But like that old phrase, go softly into this good night. Be careful. And I don't think our foreign policy has been careful at all. And I don't think the press has done a good job. New York Times came out with a great story recently about people who consultants for the government and so forth. But it takes a long time to put those things together.
Mm-hmm.
And the private contractors in the Middle East and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But the gentleman has a right to be bleak.
Thanks, Gerald, for the call. Peter from Winona, Minnesota. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm just wondering if the delegates held by John Edwards will come into play in the strategy for Clinton at any point if they miss the after the first round in the at the convention, or if he releases them beforehand. Is there any comment on that? Thank you.
No, it's a very good question, and I don't have the answer. I think a lot will depend upon if, say, Obama is the person who comes out with more delegates than anyone, how he deals with Edwards. But I don't know. And it's been a long time since we've had a convention that didn't go just to the first ballot.
Yeah. Thanks, Peter. One more call. We're almost out of time. Frank, very quickly from Madison.
Oh, I'd like to point out that one of the really encouraging things is that the American people, or the electorate, at least in the primaries, are showing up. And when they show up and vote, they tend to confound the conventional wisdom and the role assigned to them. And so if this goes on in the general election, if they continue to pay attention and are able to see through false issues, they would be responding to any challenge to them to actually behave as a responsible public.
Thanks, Frank, for the call. Sander Van Oker, a delight always to speak with you. Thank you so much for all your wisdom.
Well, thank you for having me, and if you ever have too much in the way of walleye pike, just send it out here to Santa Barbara. Okay?
There's never too much of walleye pike.
Okay.
Thanks, Sander.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Yeah, our pleasure. Sander Van Oker, 40-year veteran of print and broadcast journalism. He worked for NBC and ABC News, the New York Times, and also the Washington Post, and started his whole career at the Manchester Guardian. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the program, for getting this great guest, and also for her on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We'll have another hour coming up. This is the Ideas Network.